Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Ladies and gentlemen, take my advice. Pull down your pants and slide on the ice.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it's Wednesday, January 26, 2022, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, day 372 of the Biden-Harris administration, 286 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram, TheBobSeska is my handle, and I'm on Twitter at BobSeska_go. All right, it's always a special occasion when Donna Halper stops by the show. Every time she's on, I swear to God, I get stacks and stacks of emails and DMs begging for her to be on more often. And guess what? I totally agree. For those of you just joining us, Donna is a college professor, a media historian, the author of 6 books. She's a former radio DJ credited with introducing my favorite band, Rush, to American radio. And she runs a blog called Dialogue and Discourse. Links in the description to support all of Donna's things. Oh, most importantly, she's a good friend of mine, right? So hang on tight. We're about to get schooled in journalism and the news media by one of the all-time greats. Meantime, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content on our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, here comes Donna.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Have you survived the worst thing that ever happened in the history of humanity?
What would that be? Omicron? The pandemic? What?
Joe Biden said a swear word.
He said a swear word.
I'm in a decline about this. I don't know if I can go on. I do not know if I can go on.
Yeah. Okay?
Why would you explain to me, Bob, you're an intelligent guy.
Okay.
Would you explain to me why this has been a 2.5 day story?
I have no idea.
I don't get it. Yeah. I don't even get why it was a story at all. I mean, the former guy, trademark,
right.
TFG, the former guy, he cursed at reporters directly.
Oh,
I mean, it wasn't a hot mic and he didn't know the mic was on.
Yeah.
Okay. Or didn't think about it. And by the way, this has happened to every president since modern times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Remember when Bush and Cheney were like kibitzing and a New York Times reporter came in and Cheney said to Bush something about, oh, here's insert name of Times reporter. Mm. Boy, what a he is. And Bush went, yeah, absolutely. He's definitely a reporter.
Yeah.
And it was caught in a live mic and it lasted for about like one day, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And on my Twitter feed, I had every one of my conservative friends. It was like, nah, your guy said a swear. Oh, really?
Yeah. You know what you do, Donna, in those cases? You find the gif of Donald Trump mocking Serge Kovalevsky's disability.
Oh,
yeah. And that's all you need as a reply to that nonsense.
All the time. I mean, he called Chuck Todd something that I would never call my stepchildren. Let me tell you.
Okay. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he said racist things to Yimmy Shalcindor.
Yep.
He said, please, we could make a long list.
Megyn Kelly. He went after Megyn Kelly. Mika Brzezinski. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't recall any of my conservative friends saying that they were shocked and chagrined, mortified and stupefied by the bad language that President Trump was using. Nope. Mm-hmm. Not a sound.
Yeah.
Now, agreed. As I've said on Twitter, I've been very consistent. Okay. I personally believe that presidents should maintain a standard. They mm-hmm. should set an example.
Yeah.
We all swear, Lord knows, okay? But it doesn't have to be in the public sphere. In the public sphere, you're the leader of the free world, dude, okay? Even if you think that Pick a Reporter is in fact a... Why? Why put it out there? It just isn't becoming, okay? But... that having been said, is that the worst thing that's ever been done?
No.
Is this even worthy of a two-day story? Is it a story?
You know what the story is, Donna? That he called and apologized the same day.
Yes.
Because
yes!
What's happened here, and this is something that your conservative friends don't understand. No Trump supporter understands this. Donald Trump set new and terrible traditions for the presidency, opened up new doors for awful behavior. And what happens with the presidency is when someone does that, when someone opens those doors, well, all of the subsequent presidents are easily able to walk right through those doors. And so if Donald Trump debases the presidency, if Donald Trump turns the presidency into a platform to say those sorts of things, then naturally, the next president is going to feel a little bit more at liberty to do that. And, you know,
this particular case, I think that this was Biden being frustrated with all the troll questions that come from certain people.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, every administration feels this way, okay? I mean, every administration tries to have a few friendlies in the room, you know, a few people that are going to throw them softball. You know, why are you the most wonderful president who has ever lived in the history of humanity, sir? You know? And conversely, every administration has a couple of people that are their antagonists.
Right.
And it's almost like a game. Mm. It's like they say something outrageous. You get to huff and puff about it. They go on whatever their preferred channel is and they huff and puff and it's a win-win. So in fairness, Biden should have been ready for it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have been like, my God, there he goes again. It should have just been like, yep, that's what he does. And if he did something different, it wouldn't be him.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Peter Ducey has a reputation for asking these kinds of troll questions.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, as a media historian, I got to be honest, he's not the only person that has ever done this.
Nope.
It's just the internet amplifies it.
Of course.
Magnifies it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Turns it like on steroids. And this is, again, not a two-day story, but I think it's one of those simple stories. And the media very often like simple. It's kind of like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Well, in this case, it's pretty obvious. And I'm like, okay, let's just move this along.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bigger problem.
What's
and
that?
Here's my bigger problem. I have a lot of friends who are teachers, okay? I am, as many in your audience know, a former rock and roll DJ.
Yep.
But I'm also a media historian. And these days, having reinvented myself, I'm a professor. I am a big fan of being able to talk with my students about current events. But in Virginia and in Texas and in Florida, let's play a guessing game. What do all three of these states have in common with respect to their governors? Wonder what it is. But there are now laws or rules that teachers cannot discuss divisive subjects.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
Divisive subjects. I'm sorry, half of the stuff we talk about is divisive.
Mm-hmm.
They're also not supposed to offend, and they're also not supposed to make anyone, quote, feel uncomfortable.
White people, specifically.
Yeah, that yeah. certainly does seem to be the case now, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, as a friendly white person, I gotta say, I really believe we need to talk about the problems in our past. If I talk about the problems in our past, does that mean I'm teaching my students to hate America?
No.
No!
No.
Absolutely not!
Mm-hmm.
If you, as a talk show host, talk about the problems that the former guy brought upon the presidency, are you doing that because you hate America? Gee, I don't think so. I think you're talking about the administration that we had before so that the mistakes that were made in tone, in the way he treated people, in some of his policies, maybe that won't happen again. Maybe we won't have another insurrection.
Yep.
Maybe we'll learn. Don't be a sore loser. If you lose an election, you lost the election.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thinks that their side should have won. I was not happy with how Bush v. Gore turned out, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I accepted the fact that Bush was the president. Was I happy about it? No, I was not. Did I like his policies? No, I did not. But I would not have gone to Washington and tried to overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make me a silly person? You know, we
no.
used to have norms. We used to have norms.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you remember Norm. Norm's a good guy.
Yes, Norm. Yes, sat at the corner bar stool there.
Yes,
cheers.
More than one Norm.
Yeah.
But the fact remains. So now, if I am teaching history, I have to worry if I'm in Texas or I'm in Virginia or if I'm in Florida. I got to worry that something I say might offend someone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of my friends on the right, and I'm not being sarcastic, I really do have friends on the right, and we debate this. They like to say to me, oh, it's you people on the left with your cancel culture. Removing books from libraries? I'm sorry, that's happening in red states right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Not being allowed to discuss certain historical subjects, that's happening in red states right now.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that not the thing that the left is always being accused of? We are now telling teachers, you can't talk about X. Sounds like cancel culture to me.
Yeah. Donald Trump did that for 4 years with the DC press corps, right? With the White House press corps. Call them the enemies of the people. Constantly
absolutely.
Shut them down. It's just like the very beginning of our conversation.
Yeah. Governor of Virginia now has a tip line where students can call and basically rat out professors that they feel are indoctrinating them.
Mm-hmm.
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Would you tell me what that means.
I have no idea. This is a movement. This is, I don't know if it's a backlash to cancel culture or what, but certainly there's a movement on the right to circle the wagons around white people. That's the part. That's the entire point of this. There was a Florida piece of legislation introduced to the state legislature where they're talking about making sure that teachers can't say anything that might offend white people. In the discussion of the past.
Make them feel like they are oppressors.
Yeah. But how do you...
I've never... Honest to God, I wasn't here. My
yeah.
ancestors were not here during slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I am not responsible for slavery. I had no slaves. However, I am responsible for telling the truth about history.
Yeah.
And the truth is racism still exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in our best interest to do what we can to create a more egalitarian society.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with saying that? Well, can't say that. So when I hear speech codes getting put into law, that sounds to me like the very thing that Republicans always used to say, oh, no, we can't. That's the left. No, guys. No. You're doing this, and it's not good.
Yeah.
I was talking about this with my students in class today. I'm a friendly professor. And I said to them, some of you are going to be teachers. And several of them said to me, this is not a time when you want to be a teacher because people are taking shots. People are blaming. people are holding us up and saying that, like, we can't say this and we can't say that. Why would you want to teach under those circumstances? Mm-hmm. I'm not there to indoctrinate anyone.
Yeah.
I'm there to raise issues, have students do research, and come to whatever conclusions they come to. Mm-hmm. But don't tell me I can't talk about X, Y, or Z. How is that American?
Yeah. How do you teach about current events, Donna? Let's say, for example, in your class, how can you possibly give your students a full view of what's happening today without talking about all of the things that built up to what's happening today, without all of the history that formed.
You got to put it in context.
Yeah, exactly.
People do not just, for example, we had this horrible situation at a synagogue in Texas, where a Muslim man from Pakistan, he's actually from England, but from a Pakistani background, came into a synagogue, held the rabbi hostage and other people hostage. Now, he didn't just wake up on a Thursday and do that. He had been immersed in a media world where the big villains were the Jews. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he called the rabbi from the Central Synagogue in New York. Now, I know that rabbi. She's a wonderful person. Okay. She really is. She's an amazing person. Rabbi Buchdahl, nationally known. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure what happened was he saw the name Central Synagogue and figured, aha, this must be the synagogue that's in charge of the United States. Because the rabbi was like, what are you calling me for? I'm a rabbi in New York. Hello, yeah. You know? But if you were told all your life, and we see this online, sad to say, I had a blog post a couple of weeks ago about anti-Semitism after that synagogue event. And I mentioned that there are people who believe the Holocaust never happened. Mm-hmm. And they believe it because they've immersed themselves in propaganda and in websites that confirm what they already believe. We've talked about confirmation bias before, okay? When you seek out sources that reinforce what you already believe. So this guy was swimming in a sea of hate. And he was taught that, like, yeah, the strings of the world are, if only I pulled the strings of the world, I wouldn't have to work so hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The truth is, nah, I don't. Mm-hmm. I do not control the world, nor do any of my fellow Jewish people, and neither do pick several other groups. And historically, it was like, oh yeah, Catholics, they're the ones. No, it's Greeks. Yeah, it's the... And every generation has one group that they are the other, and boy, we don't like them. And by not teaching about this, Santayana really did say, George Santayana, he was a philosopher, as opposed to Santana, which is a rock band that hasn't had a hit in years. Santayana really did say in 1905, I know I fact-checked the quote, and I invite your listeners to do that. Mm-hmm. When you get stuff online sent to you, which is meant to make you outraged, go fact-check the quote.
Yeah.
You may find the quote has been taken out of context, distorted beyond recognition, intended to get you upset. But in this case, it's a real quote. Mm-hmm. Santayana really did say, if you don't learn from the mistakes of the past, you will repeat them in the future.
Absolutely.
And by never talking about anti-Semitism, by never talking about racism, by never talking about homophobia, we're just perpetuating it to the next generation. Mm-hmm. How is that a good thing?
Oh, yeah. And the most...
How do I teach this stuff? I teach it by being factual. Mm-hmm. Rule number one, be fair to the facts.
Yeah.
Rule number two, don't get out ahead of the facts. With respect to be fair to the facts, if I were interviewing Donald Trump, okay, you would never know whether I like him or whether I hate him from my reporting, if I'm doing my job correctly. Mm-hmm. If I'm giving an opinion piece, then yeah, you'll know he's not my favorite guy. But if I'm doing a job and my job is reporting, my job is to report him accurately. That is my big problem with the Washington Press Corps right now. They are so addicted to conflict that it's like, let's talk about how Joe Biden is the worst president who ever lived. What?
Yeah.
But my point with respect to how I teach stuff, be fair to the facts. Don't get out in front of the facts.
Yeah.
Be fair to the facts. Treat each story with a commitment to accuracy and a commitment to telling the story, not in a slanted way, even if you don't like it, tell it the way it actually happened.
Absolutely.
You want to go over on the opinion side and rant for 2 hours? That's a different story. But be fair to the facts. Don't get out in front of the facts. Don't get out ahead of what we know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't guess. Don't speculate. Don't tell me, oh, you know, this must make, well, unless you know, okay? Like, I don't want to hear that Joe Biden has dementia. I don't want to hear that Donald Trump has dementia. Unless you are their therapist, you don't know whether they have dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So stick with what policies you like, what policies you disagree with. I'll be a happier person. You want to rant and rave? Keep their mental health out of it unless you are treating them, in which case you have some knowledge of the facts. Like, I don't want to take my medical advice from Governor DeSantis of Florida.
I certainly hope not.
I don't want to take my medical advice from a senator. I really don't.
Yeah.
I don't care who the senator is. I'll take my medical advice from Dr. Fauci, who has served 5 administrations, both Republican and Democratic, and who never wanted to be a political person until he got pulled into it. Okay.
Yep.
So he at least is an epidemiologist. He knows about diseases and pandemics. It's how he makes his living.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we can like take our medical advice from people that actually do it for a living.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's kind of how I teach. Be fair to the facts. Don't get out ahead of the facts. But other than that, I understand that in a Washington where they had a president who was a quote machine, who every day said something else that was controversial, and now we get Biden. Boring.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but he makes gaffes. Yes, he does. He's a stutterer, and a lot of times what he says isn't the way he intended to say it.
Yeah.
You know that. Don't be dishonest,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know that that's why he misspoke, okay? It wasn't like, well, he intended to, nah, it just came out that way. Come back in a few minutes and he'll say it differently. But the fact is, the press corps got addicted to a controversial quote a minute. It was great for ratings. It was great for eyeballs. It was clickbait on steroids. And now we get Biden, who just isn't clickbaity.
Yeah.
Oh, but he said a swear. That's clickbaity. Yeah, you're trying to put him in a box he doesn't belong in. He's a more traditional president. Well, he's an old guy. Well, Trump wasn't exactly young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Trump is what, 75? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to be 75 on Valentine's Day. I'm still young and cute. But the fact remains that people that are in their 70s, they've lived a while. So you can't really apply to them the standards of perhaps a 20 or a 30 year old. It's a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, the Washington Press Corps likes conflict. Todd Gitlin talked about this. You may have talked with Todd. Interesting professor. Wrote a wonderful book back in 1980 called The Whole World is Watching. It was actually his doctoral dissertation about how the traditional press corps covered the anti-war movement. And of course, the traditional press corps back then were people that had fought in World War II. And they were like, oh, you kids, you know, you anti-American kid, you commies. And the fact is, the anti-war movement was actually making some pretty good points. Like, why were we in Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't attacked us. What were we doing over there? Okay. And it was escalating and we were being lied to. And the anti-war movement was asking about this. And some of the folks in the press corps took a very dim view of it. And that kind of led to a sort of alternative press. But Gitlin, who was in the anti-war movement, was kind of like, you're talking about me like I'm some, you know, hippie commie Marxist. And I'm somebody with questions about my government. And yeah, you know, there are probably some hippie commie Marxists. And I don't happen to be one. And since you didn't talk to me, how do you even know what I believe? And I guess I feel that way a lot. I feel like we tend to speculate, violating rule number two. Mm-hmm. We tend to speculate a lot when in reality, we should probably talk to the people. But there again, Gitlin said, there is a framing of events called the conflict frame. He wasn't the first person to mention this, mm-hmm. but having been chewed up by it, it was like, create a conflict where maybe there isn't one. So you got on the one side, people that support the war and whatever the president says, and let's go to war. And the other side, let's question the war. Why do we have to go to war? Why do we need this war? Is this the right war? Both sides have every right to be there. They should have this discussion and then come to some understanding. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's portrayed like this massive battle between good and evil. Oh, my God. And our side is good and the other side is bad. And let's go to war. And Gitlin was like, the media love a conflict. And wherever possible, it makes it easier to tell the story that way. Because if you have a good guy and you have a bad guy, boom, you're done. But a lot of stories have nuance to them.
Yeah.
A lot of stories aren't just simply, should we do X or should we do Y? A lot of stories are like, yeah, but maybe there's A and B and C. Does everything have to be treated like it's, oh my God, World War III? Like, the reason I love being on your show, we can talk about issues.
Yeah.
Maybe we agree, maybe we don't agree. But we can still talk about them. Mm-hmm. And maybe people that listen to your show or watch it or whatever, they can have opinions about it too. And we can still be friends.
Yeah.
What's wrong with having a passionate discussion about issues, agreeing to disagree, and then just going on with our lives and then maybe circling back and seeing if any minds were changed? But we're not there. We're in our little silos. We're in one group of people getting one very, very different version of reality, mm-hmm. and the other group getting something else. And no wonder we're talking past each other. And it seems like a lot of the Beltway media, their way of dealing with that is just, hey, let's find a conflict. Well, Biden said X. Yeah, but Trump said Y. And then we can get into whataboutism and...
Yeah, yeah.
Makes my head hurt.
In terms of the White House press corps and the pursuit of the facts and this element of journalism that we both understand quite thoroughly, which is that, you know, I think the role of a reporter is to report the facts and to hold leadership accountable. I think that's, you know, the Washington Post's motto, democracy dies in darkness.
Comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the problem comes in where... let's say you're a White House reporter. You're working in the West Wing, covering the administration, and you're working during Trump, right? And you have a certain number of stories you have to file per week. So you file those stories based on this array of deeply abnormal, damaging, institution-crushing things that Donald Trump was up to for those 4 years. Then Donald Trump leaves office. And Joe Biden, yes, obviously, round of applause. And then Joe Biden becomes president. You still have to file the same number of stories as a White House reporter. So what are you going to fill those stories with? Joe,
there's something else. Yeah. There's something else. And you and I understand this because we're in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Peter Alexander, okay? Mm-hmm. Or I'm Kristen Welker. Or I'm Yamiche Alcindor.
Yeah.
Or I'm Peter Doocy. My job is to get my face on television. Mm-hmm. I'm Jim Acosta. It doesn't matter who I'm working for, NBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, NPR, it doesn't matter. My job is to somehow get my face out there. And so what am I going to do to get my face out there? I'm in a room full of 45 people or 50, okay? What's a good way to get my face out there? Ask a provocative question.
Mm-hmm.
And by provocative, I don't necessarily mean a gotcha. Okay, I'm talking about something that's going to guarantee that it gets on the evening news. And while it is true that younger demos don't watch the evening news, they may get it on YouTube. They may get it as part of a conversation on the Stephanie Miller Show, mm-hmm. or as part of the conversation on pick another network, or Tucker Carlson, or whoever. So they're going to hear it ripped from its context, but they are going to hear it. And I think a lot of reporters today, unfortunately, because they are in some ways responsible for the ratings their network gets or their channel, they feel almost like, oh my God, I can't ask a process question. That won't get me on the news. Well, you know, tell me about the budget reconciliation. Nobody cares. But if I get into a big thing about where, you know, but you said blah, blah, blah yesterday, and today you're saying dee-dee-dee. Yeah, that's like, okay, there's a conflict. So I almost think it forces reporters to have to come up with something that's going to like get people talking. And yeah. I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing.
No, it's not. That plays exactly into my example, Donna, which is that those stories reported during a typical week by one White House reporter, whether New York Times, MSNBC or CNN, whatever, that's going to cover the same number of potentially scandalous things as the, you know, week's worth of reporting during the Trump administration. And so what happens is people read this and they see the same number of Joe Biden scandals as there were Trump scandals over the course of a typical 1 week span, as the example goes.
Even though one of these things is not like the other.
Exactly. One is deeply abnormal and the other is profoundly normal. Everything that Joe Biden is doing is well within the boundaries of a normal, traditional presidency. The mistakes, the gaffes,
when I say normal
the victories.
To all my conservative friends, I'm not expecting you to agree with everything he does.
Yeah.
And take Trump out of the equation. I didn't agree with everything Ronald Reagan did. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't agree with everything that Dwight D. Eisenhower or George W. Bush or, George Bush the daddy, but they were traditional presidents. I fully expected that there would be things they did I agreed with and things they did I didn't agree with. And that gave us all something to talk about over coffee. You know, I can't believe what so-and-so did. But I never felt a fear for our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt under any of those Republican presidents. And people that know me, I'm center-left. But I have absolutely voted for moderate Republicans in the past, back when the Republican Party was very different from what it is today.
Sure.
Okay. I vote based on the candidate and based on the issues. Okay. These days, I'm much more likely to vote for Democrats because of where they are on the issues. But if there's a moderate Republican who's good on certain issues, I might give them a look. Sure. But my point is this. When you are evaluating who stands for democracy? I was terrified by how much the previous president, Mr. Trump, embraced dictators and autocrats. That made me horribly nervous. Mm-hmm. The fact that he never saw a dictator that he didn't like, the fact that he never saw an autocrat he didn't like. So to my conservative friends, I'm not trying to be a partisan here, okay? I'm not saying, well, just because he was a Republican. No, he didn't seem to like democracy. And that made me very, very uncomfortable because I like me some democracy. Mm-hmm. I really do. And I don't like dictators. I don't like autocrats. I don't like strong men. I just don't. And I don't think they're good for a country. And any president who fancies himself as a strong man who's going to like tell everybody, you know, I alone can. No, it's not. No, yeah. I alone can fix it. Uh-uh. We're all out here. We all should be able to vote. We all should be able to make decisions. Are there factors that are messing up our democracy? Sure. Mm-hmm. There's too much money in politics. Let's talk about that. But I've never been so scared for our democracy as I was during the 4 years of the Trump administration and during the insurrection. And unless we take a strong stand in favor of democracy, it could happen again. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying to me.
All right, stand by. Don't nobody move. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with Donna right after these words.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
By amplifying Joe Biden's gaffes and some of his mistakes, to the same level as Trump, or maybe even larger than Trump. I mean, we've obviously seen with the jobs numbers that came out at the beginning of January, we saw this doomsaying around jobs in the economy because of the December jobs numbers that when Donald Trump had the same numbers, it was like, look how great the economy is.
Oh, I know.
So
stock market was up relentlessly under Biden.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear about it.
Yeah.
I never hear about it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying that we should judge the economy by the stock market. But I mean, Mr. Trump, every single time the stock market went up, it was like, hey, look what I've done for the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market was up to new highs under Biden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't tell anyone. Don't say it. No.
Yeah. Well, I the other layer to that is that by doing that, by presenting this false equivalence between Trump and Biden, the mismatch, the disparity in coverage that we see now versus then, what the press is actually doing is, in a sense, given that democracy is on the ballot, basically here, we're talking about in the midterms, certainly in 24, democracy is on the ballot. The first dissidents that an authoritarian, fascist, idiocratic president would start to throw into prison, it would be members of the press corps.
Yep.
They would be the first to be arrested, black bagged.
And when he used that Stalinist, you know, enemy of the people stuff.
Yeah.
And I find it chilling. I really do. When someone, first of all, as a media historian, it is a known fact.
Mm-hmm.
Every president since George Washington has been unhappy with their press coverage. Okay.
Yeah.
They didn't like it. They thought the press were against them, blah, blah, blah. You never do wrong by running against the media. Okay. Everyone has done it. I'm being treated unfairly. Mm-hmm. No one's ever been treated as unfairly as me. Yep. Except that's horse manure. And you know, it's horse manure, but you know, your partisans will love you for it. So I really get it. Okay. What I don't get is why the Washington Press Corps treats everything that Biden does like it's the worst thing that ever happened in the history of humanity.
Right.
And what they're not looking at is how in state after state, certain governors in certain red states are making it harder to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a fact. That's not hyperbole. That's not Auntie Donna making it, oh, you're a Democrat. No, I'm just a person. And I'm looking at the facts. And the facts are that in many, many states now, in Texas, half of the requests for absentee ballots are getting just thrown out.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they didn't do X, Y, or Z. Well, they must have been frauds. No, they just didn't fill out the form right because the form was so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the point. It's designed like that. So if it's harder to vote, if we're shutting down polling places in black neighborhoods and putting in more polling places in white neighborhoods,
what
does this mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
There's something to me.
Right. Plus, you add into the mix, and this goes into, well, no, the Republicans aren't leading us toward authoritarianism, fascism, and all the rest of it. And then you got to point to Fox News Channel, Tucker Carlson doing his show from Hungary, where there is an authoritarian leader there. Tucker Carlson defending authoritarianism in Hungary.
Siding with Russia.
Siding with Russia is another great example. Yeah.
The dominant discourse is that we should side with Russia. Because Russia is a white Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
You, first of all, no, they're not. And second of all, listen very carefully. That sound you hear? Ronald Reagan spinning in his grave.
Oh, yeah.
Republicans since forever used to stand against Russian authoritarianism, what they perceived as Russian aggression, communism, this, that. Now suddenly we're like, we love us some Russian dictators? Really? Ew.
You know where they're holding CPAC this year? They're having CPAC in Hungary.
Are they?
The Conservative Political Action Committee of the United States is having their annual convention in Hungary. They love Orban.
A country
Orban.
That promotes anti-Semitism, yeah. A country that is eliminating freedom of the press, and a country that is turning more and more and more authoritarian. Mm.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, but they're against gay rights. Right. So they're okay with us.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine MSNBC broadcasting from Venezuela? Can you imagine the Netroots Nation conference, which is a left-wing conference every year? Can you imagine that happening in Venezuela or Havana? You know, that would be the equivalent. Of course that doesn't happen. Of course it's never going to happen that way. But the Republicans...
I don't understand the authoritarian turn that the Republican Party has taken. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll be very happy to sit here and criticize some of the stuff the left has done. Rui Teixeira wrote a wonderful article, spell name R-U-Y, last name T-E-I-X-E-I-R-A, Rui Teixeira. If I'm destroying his name, I apologize, but I think I'm pretty close. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he wrote a really good article about the things that he thinks Democrats are doing wrong, okay? And I agree or disagree. He made a very good case. It was stuff to think about. You can read it, decide for yourself if you agree with him or not. And he is a Democrat, okay? And he's more of a moderate Democrat. God bless him, okay? He came up with some very interesting points. I invite people to check it out. But there's nothing there that's authoritarianism or dictatorial or, hey, let's become commies. No. That's not what he's saying at all. He's asking people to be more reasonable, get out of their silos, and do what's right for the country. Republicans used to stand for that. Mm. I don't understand why they gave that up. I don't understand why they are now supporting ultra-right-wing dictators who have strains of anti-Semitism, who have strains of anti a number of minority groups. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, intellectually, I sort of do get it. But emotionally, I'm like, this is really sad. Mm-hmm. I miss the Republican Party I grew up with. And, you know, there were a lot of good candidates back then. And there were also some candidates who were kind of from the Joe McCarthy wing, who were sort of, I realize I'm dating myself, but that's okay. I am what I am. God willing, I'll be 75 on Valentine's Day, okay? Not supposed to be here. Cancer survivor, 7 years now. Very happy to be alive. Mm-hmm. And it hurts me when I see politicians siding with dictators, particularly dictators who would kill people from my ethnic group, who are against people from my ethnic group, who would be very fine about seeing people from my ethnic group put in concentration camps. And no, I'm not exaggerating. You know what really toasted me the other day?
What's
was
that?
The fact when Newt Gingrich said that the members of the select committee, well, they'll be, you know, when the Republicans take over the House and the Senate, maybe they should be put in jail. For doing what? The Republicans had Benghazi hearings. I mean, I could raise a family on the number of Benghazi hearings they had. It took so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was okay.
Yeah.
But the select committee to try to discover what happened on January 6th, those people should be put in jail. That's the direction the Republican Party is going in. We're going to put people in jail just because we don't agree with them.
Yeah.
Really?
I hope he keeps talking like that. I hope he keeps saying and threatening things like that, because nothing's going to get swing voters out to vote, independent voters out to vote faster than, oh, you mean the Republicans? What they're going to do is they're going to come into office and just start, you know, randomly arresting people. You know, I've been predicting for some time now, long before Newt Gingrich said what he said, which is that the Republicans, if they win the House again, they're going to dissolve the 1-6 committee. And
immediately.
And they're going to replace.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Right. And they're immediately going to form the committee to investigate the 1-6 committee.
Absolutely.
That will be the point. And
then they'll grift off of it. They'll raise money. Yeah. Our committee is about to be shut down by the left. Only you can save it by donating $50.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, there's another
grifter's gonna grift.
There's another thing I've been concerned about, and it's not, I wouldn't even really call it a movement yet. It's not, it hasn't really taken hold, but there have been some prominent people who've talked about this, and that is the done with COVID movement. Barry Weiss started down this road Friday, but
Weiss is not happy. She's just not happy.
No, she's definitely not happy. But
perpetually not happy.
Nope.
And won't be happy that I said she wasn't happy.
Yeah, but it's so counterfactual. And
Barry, call me. You can tell me why you're not happy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't understand the logic behind this, other than to say, we've gotten to the point where we're just being self-destructive now, I guess, because it's not the first time Bill Maher has talked about something like that. And it's not the first time I've seen that opinion expressed online. I've certainly seen it expressed by a number of people who say, yeah, you know what, Joe Biden, the Democratic Party, what they need to do is declare the pandemic over and that we're reopening. They need to become the party of normalcy. Well, that's all well and good if the pandemic were actually over, but it's not over
yet. Making the party of fiction.
Yeah. I mean, nothing would have the greater blowback than getting up.
Did you know that Baby Yoda over here can fly? I say so. I've just declared that Baby Yoda can fly. Okay?
That's right. Therefore, he can. That is just.
Can't you see it? Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Come on.
What creates this kind of school of thought, Donna? What has motivated Bill Maher to go down this road? Sure, he's done with COVID. We're all sick of COVID, right?
But he's become increasingly cranky and increasingly given to right-wing talking points, which is why he's getting a lot more love from conservatives who forget that his entire history is being a provocateur. The truth is, a lot of people are fed up, and a lot of people don't want to think about this anymore. Hello.
Me too.
A lot of people don't want to wear a mask for one more day. And a lot of people have been told for months now that it's okay to be selfish. It's okay to just think about what you want as opposed to how what you're doing affects someone else. I have a compromised immune system. If you're around me and you're unvaccinated, I could be dead. Now, that may be fine with my enemies, but I really would like to stick around. Mm-hmm. So I would thank people if they would, in fact, wear a mask when they're around me, just because of the fact that I really want to continue on doing whatever it is I do. Yeah. So when I'm around other people out in public, I wear a mask. Am I happy about it? Heavens no.
No.
Really not.
Who is?
But I've got a whole bunch of color coordinated masks and I'm trying my best.
I'm sure they look great.
The bottom line is, when the pandemic is in fact over, let's all have a giant party. I'll buy the ice cream. But for now, it's not quite over yet. So let's do the things we need to do to stay safe. Mm. I have very good reason to believe that boosters work. The reason being, we've had to have booster shots for years.
Yep.
This is not a new thing. This is not some left-wing conspiracy. There are, like, flu shots you often need boosters. Kids with their childhood vaccinations often need boosters. I need a booster on my tetanus shot. It's been like 11 years. Vaccines are wonderful. They're a miracle of modern science. As a media historian, I've been doing a lot of research about pandemics to see like where people died and what caused their deaths, because I'm writing about a certain era. It's tragic how many people died during the influenza epidemic in 1918. And I mean, you look at stuff like that, it's like some of them are only like 10 years old, 11 years old. Mm-hmm. They lived in tenements. They had no ventilation. Today, we have an opportunity to keep ourselves safe and keep those around us safe. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even imagine the reaction by just rank and file voters, Donna, who would listen to the whatever Democratic congressman they're dealing with, or Joe Biden himself, or whoever, saying the pandemic is over. And then you turn around and you look, and your friends and your family members are still getting hospitalized. Some of them are dying. Some of them are getting infected. Some of them quarantining. And you're going, how out of touch is Joe Biden and the Democrats for suddenly declaring this thing over? It seems to me as if
Sarah Palin went out to eat and wasn't vaccinated.
Yeah.
She got COVID.
Yeah.
And not so much, you know, I don't wish COVID on anyone.
No.
Okay. Unlike Laura Ingraham, who applauded when I think somebody was Colin Powell.
Yeah, General Milley. Yeah. It was General Milley. Yeah.
General Milley got COVID. And I'm like, boy, that's childish. Okay.
Yep.
If Sarah Palin has COVID, I'm sorry that she has COVID. I hope she gets better soon. But I'm really concerned about all the people that she potentially exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And she should have at least masked because she wasn't vaccinated.
Yep.
It just, I grew up in a world where public health was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you really did care about the consequences of your actions and how your actions affected other people. Silly me. I guess the world changed and it's every person for themselves now, maybe?
Yeah, that's the dominating mindset, I'm afraid.
You're nasty
yeah.
and brutish.
Yeah.
I mean, let's all wrestle. But the good news, I suppose, is that we may have a woman of color on the Supreme Court for the first time.
Yeah, how about that? Stephen Breyer is retiring. Good
what
timing.
What a nice man. Yeah. I had the privilege of meeting him. What a sweetheart, okay? Mm-hmm. If they make nicer people, I haven't met them. But he's 83, and he's decided that he wants to retire. God bless him.
Yeah.
And I notice that Ketanji Brown Jackson, who has already been vetted,
mm-hmm.
and has a really strong reputation, and who was a former clerk for Justice Breyer. So she is well known. She's on the U.S. Court of Appeals in the D.C. Circuit. She's educated. She knows her stuff. And I think it would be really good, not out of some belief in tokenism, but just out of having a Supreme Court that represents America. I think it would be very nice to have a woman of color on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
She is eminently qualified.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, whether it's going to affect the balance, sadly, Democrats historically have never voted based on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
We all tried to warn yeah. Democrats who stayed home in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, what you see is what you get. Thanks, mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And by the way, there was no Biden rule. Biden made a speech and he said, you know, X, Y, and Z ought to happen. But he didn't try to make policy about no Supreme Court picks in an election. He never said it.
No. Nope.
It's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rule. But the reality is Mr. Biden has an opportunity to do something really good. And pick a really qualified candidate who also happens to be a woman of color.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope he does. I think that will be excellent. And I wish the Supreme Court were more balanced.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're about to see the end of Roe v. Wade. We're about to see a whole bunch of things that I think are important.
Mm-hmm.
Just go bye-bye based on ideology
rather than
based on the law.
And of course, Clarence Thomas is getting older. Sam Alito is getting older as well. Elections are more important than ever now for Democrats, and obviously for the Supreme Court reasons, also for preserving democracy. That old yarn.
You're either up in the stands or you're out yeah. on the field.
But
now more than ever, get involved.
Will the confirmation process for whoever replaces Stephen Breyer, will that get stymied by Manchin and Sinema? Do you think they're going to be up to their old shenanigans?
I don't think there's anything about Ketanji Brown Jackson that would be problematic. There were hearings about her before
mm-hmm.
when she was, you know, nominated for the lower courts.
Yeah.
And she passed with flying colors. So this isn't a controversial situation. This isn't a case where it's somebody where, oh, I don't know about their views. Everybody knows about her views. She's a moderate.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you could try to paint her as somewhere between Satan and whoever, but you won't get very far.
Mm-hmm.
Her record speaks for itself.
Yep.
She is quite fair, quite moderate, quite respected. I've done a little research on her. There's not a whole lot bad that you can say unless you're a partisan on a partisan talk show, in which case, oh my God, you know, but the truth is there's nothing there for Mr. Manchin mm-hmm. or Ms. Sinema to look at and go, we don't know. This is like, huh, yep, this is a good choice. And
yeah,
let's just
yeah.
hope it moves swiftly.
Well, fingers crossed that it does go smoothly.
And Kamala Harris can break the tie.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Absolutely. And again, thank you, Mitch McConnell, for eliminating the judicial filibuster. Because,
yep.
yeah, that's going to smooth the way. Absolutely.
We love you, Mitch.
Well, not really. No.
Yeah,
not,
he was for it before he was against it. So
yeah.
Ain't that always the way?
So before we wrap up, who's going to win the Spotify war, Neil Young or Joe Rogan?
Oh, my God. To be honest with you, probably Rogan.
I think so. They invested a lot of money.
Yeah. Today more powerful than provocateurs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I can huff and puff about Alex Jones, but he's got a following.
Yeah.
You and I can huff and puff about Rogan or about a whole bunch of Rush Limbaugh when he was still alive. There are people that I sit there and I scratch my head. I don't understand why anyone listens to them. And yet, these are folks that say stuff that gets their audience outraged and motivated. And
mm-hmm.
we on the center left have never been able to find a way to create those kinds of folks. I'm not saying we should, but I'm saying because a lot of our positions are nuanced, because a lot of our positions require like thinking about it and looking at the facts. And please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the other side doesn't think and doesn't have facts. I did not say that. But I'm saying that there are some provocateurs who make a living presenting everything as if us good, them bad, and they just grift off of it endlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hear a lot of that on our side. I mean, we do have some provocateurs
sure.
by and large.
Yeah.
But even the people that are the lefty commentators, they tend to have very, I think, very reasonable positions. There used to be some righty commentators that had very reasonable positions. There still are a few left in print. Jennifer Rubin, Michael Gerson. I don't agree with everything they say, mm-hmm. but they're not bomb throwers.
Right.
But these bomb throwers have found ways to monetize their bomb throwing. And as long as they can continue making money, getting clicks, getting people enmeshed in their conspiracies and this and that, sad to say, they're going to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some people that go, hey, Neil Young, he's right. But in the final analysis, I got the feeling that the Joe Rogan fan club is going to remain as strong as ever.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look at the number of lawsuits that Alex Jones has faced over the past few years. And he's still on the air.
Donald Trump has faced over the years.
Yeah. Hey, by the way,
I had a nickel for every lawsuit that Donald Trump has faced over the years, I wouldn't be working so hard.
Yeah.
I'd be a multimillionaire.
Who's most Absolutely. Likely to indict Trump? Is it going to be Fulton County, Georgia? Is it going to be New York City? Is it going to be the DOJ? Which one's going to get to Trump first? Which one's going to get the indictment?
Absolutely. And it's hard to tell. It's
hard
to tell. Well, can I thank you once again for having me on your
show? Oh, yes, of course. You can thank me all you want.
I hope I was interesting. I felt like I was babbling.
You're the best. One last thing, though. Both of us being mutual Rush fans, there is and I don't know if anyone sent you this link yet, this YouTube link, but there is a YouTuber called The Charismatic Voice, and she posted this wonderful reaction video as she watched and listened to The Spirit of Radio.
Oh, I saw that.
You saw that. And she's hearing Rush for the very first time.
Yep, I saw it.
Yes, what a wonderful video that was.
Oh, I know. Every day, though.
Yeah.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting turned on to Rush.
Yes.
And we keep forgetting, okay, because we've been fans for a while. We keep forgetting that because of YouTube and because of podcasts and mm-hmm. because of Spotify and even some radio stations,
yeah.
there are people every day that are like, wow, who's that band?
It's incredible.
Band before. Yep. Wow. Okay. I mean, there's people that still think the Beatles are alive and together, you know, mm-hmm. but there you are.
Yeah.
But the fact still remains. The music of Neil Peart, and we lost Neil 2 years ago. It seems like it was only yesterday.
I know.
But the music of Neil Peart and his drumming, but his lyrics have been life-changing. I've been on a series of podcasts called Rush Deep Dives. You can find them on YouTube, where we take an album and we analyze the lyrics. It is amazing to me the number of people that are still moved, still touched, still emotionally tied to Rush's lyrics, to their songs, and new people are coming along every day. There is mm-hmm. a worldwide community of Rush fans. It is a privilege be a part of.
It really is. The blog is Dialogue and Discourse, dhalperblog.blogspot.com, at Devorah Leah on Twitter, and of course, on such fine podcasts as this one.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Best podcast ever.
I agree.
Wish me an early happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Mwah, mwah. Have a great one. A Valentine's Day.
My
what
enemies
a perfect
are
occasion.
Saying, no. Yeah. But, you know, I just, every day I wake up, I'm like, wow, I'm still here. My
I love you.
Thanks
for
having me.
Have a great
love
rest of your day.
Pieces. You're a rock star.
We'll talk to you next time.
Underneath the cloudy sky, cotton candy haze. And I'm floating like a feather with a raindrop tail.